Hey everyone, this is Jeff Plate of El Terrain. You're watching CMS TV.
All right! Listen up! Hold on to your seats! Grab your girls, grab your beers!
Hey everybody, this is Charlie from Anthrax, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle.
This is Mark Metcalf, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio.
You are listening to Today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio. Yes, Kato Kalin listens to this all the time.
Monty Heath, so Warren Heath, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Hey, what's up? It's John from Skillet, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Fasten your seatbelts!
Sound the alarm. Incarceration Music and Tattoo Festival is back with Shinedown. Godsmack, Breaking Benjamin, Hailstorm, The Offspring, Chevelle, Bad Omens, Chimera, and so many more. Report to historic Ohio State Reformatory this July 19th through 21st. 3 days of nonstop rock, tattoos, blood prison, haunted house, and more. Passes on sale now at incarceration.com.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with Today's Boondoggle. And real quick housekeeping note, if you're watching us on YouTube or Rumble or BitChute or Odyssey, please hit that follow and subscribe button. And if you're listening to us on Spotify, Apple, Google, whatever podcast platform you utilize, please hit that follow and subscribe button so we can continue to bring you the conversations I'm bringing you today. I'm getting to catch up with the atomic clock himself, Mr. Gene Hoagland. What's going on, Gene?
Boy, I got to tell you, Bill, there's tons going on. So, really exciting period happening. So, there's a million things happening right at the moment. So that's that, and they're all super duper awesome. So we're really excited around here, I tell you.
Yeah, you're one of the busiest men in show business I know, man.
Right? Yeah, indeed.
Seems like you're always on the road with somebody.
Right.
And there's so much in your catalog to try and go over. But usually when I have somebody on for the first time, I like to get a quick background. So do you remember originally what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Like when I was like five or?
Yeah, when you were like a kid.
First thing I wanted to be was a stuntman or a tap dancer. I remember that when I was like five. I was like, that's going to be what I'm going to do. You know, and then as I got a little bit older, I was like, I think I'm going to be a baseball player. But then when I was 11 years old, that's when I put myself on this path that I'm on right now. You know, I decided when I was 11 that it's like I want to be a rock and roll drummer. I just want to be a drummer for a living. I want to tour the world. I want to see the world and get paid for doing it. So, and then by the time I was 13, I was so entrenched in metal that I'm like, I want to be a metal drummer. I love double bass. I want to play double bass like Cozy Powell and Rob Wacko Hunter from Raven and Rob Reiner from Anvil. I want to be like those guys, you know, Tommy Aldridge, all that kind of stuff. So that's and my path has never strayed. You know, I'm an absolute poster child for living one's dream. Absolutely. You know, I did my first tour when I was 16, and I've been on the road pretty much for since then. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, I would say. And then, like, what do you feel it was about drums that kind of attracted you?
They were just fun. You know, like before I ever got a drum kit, I played air drums. I was an air drummer. I taught myself, literally, physically taught myself how to play drums by air drumming. You know, I'd put my record on, you know, put the record on the record player, and I would just sit there and you know, I had a pair of sticks, and I was serious about it. I wasn't just flailing about, you know, I was I started by playing along to Kiss records and Cheap Trick and Aerosmith and Queen and Ted Nugent. And then I elevated up to like Rush and UK and King Crimson and stuff like that. But like, you know, for instance, like playing along to a Rush song, you know, I would listen to what Neil Peart is playing, you know, and I was like, okay, well, I hear what his hands are doing. I get the hands and I understand what the feet are doing, and I hear what the, you know, hear where the snare's going, all the fills I can grasp. So by the first time I sat on a drum kit, I knew what I was doing. So, you know, I had a real good aptitude for it. So there you go.
And do you think your potential, love for tap dancing helped you with your double bass?
It couldn't have hurt, I tell you. You know, I think about that sometimes. Like, I remember when you wanted to be a tap dancer. Did you think that helped with your double kick? And I was like, I'm sure it established some kind of rhythm inside me, you know. And I don't know how long I wanted to be a tap dancer, but I remember being on the driveway at my folks' pad, just skipping along doing tap dancey kind of things. And I was like, well, you know, I'm good with this. You know, I can be a tap dancer. You can make a living being a tap dancer when you're five. Sure.
Yeah. And then what was like when you started playing out like regularly, what was the music scene like in your hometown?
Well, I grew up in Los Angeles, and I had an upbringing unlike anybody else that I knew, because when I was 13 years old, I started going to all the clubs in the L.A. and Orange County area, like all the Whiskey and the Troubadour and Gazzari's and the Woodstock and Radio City and all these clubs you might hear about from way back in the day, the Whiskey, legendary club. I started going out to clubs with my sister, who was 5 years older than me, and we befriended all the bands that were playing. So I got to know a ton of those bands that all became huge. You know, the radio, you know, hair metal, you know, cock rock, whatever you want to call it. All those bands I got to know when I was a kid, and like my sister and I, we would go to the shows and then we'd go to the parties afterwards and all that kind of stuff and go straight to school afterwards. And the way I was able to pull that off is I didn't party. I didn't drink or smoke or do drugs or anything like that. So, and my folks were always like, you're pretty much a latchkey kid, dude. So if you just get good grades, handle your business, and we pretty much will give you free reign. So I was like, okay, so take care of biz, have fun. So, you know, I got to know all these bands that became really, really huge. You know, I'd sometimes when my sister would go to a gig and go to the party afterwards, and I wouldn't have gone to that gig, I'd wake up in the morning, I'd see some future rock star asleep on the couch, you know, because my sister would bring him home, put him on the couch, give him some soup, you know, and go to bed kind of thing. So, I mean, that happened. And so by the time when I was 15, you know, I started working for some of these bands, 14, you know, helping them be roadies and, you know, lug gear and things like that. And so by the time I was 15 and 16, I started doing lights for a band that became really, really huge. And I got to go on the road with them when I was 16, and their first tour was my first tour. And I was doing lights for this band. They've gone on to legendary status. So, you know, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading that in your bio, man. I mean, that band being Slayer then, correct?
Indeed. Indeed. Yep.
So what a learning tree to get under, you know, type of music.
We were all kids. You know, we were all teenagers. Tom was the only dude in his 20s at the time. I think maybe Jeff and Carrie were just turning 20 around that time. So, yeah, we were teenage. Dave was still a teenager. I was a definite teenager. I remember Tom telling me a few years back, he's like, yeah, I had to come to your house and talk to your parents about letting you go on the road with us. So I was like, wow, crazy. He's like, you were a minor. I had to get your parents' permission. And I was like, okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. And then, you know, obviously that was the, you know, the bug that you needed to start branching off and playing yourself. But I mean, what a timeline of different musical acts that you've been able to play with. Like, who was your very first band?
Well, my very first band was a band ironically called Dark Angel that had nothing to do with the later Dark. I didn't name either Dark Angel, so they just happened to be called Dark. I made them change their name because I thought the name was a little not heavy enough, you know. And then I made them change the name to Carnage. And then after that was a band. After I did the Slayer run, I was in a band with a couple of the Slayer crew, and also our guitarist was Michelle Meldrum, and that was a band called War God. And you could probably hear that stuff on YouTube or some of the old compilation records from around the 1985 era. And then I went from War God to the Dark Angel that we all know and love. So those were my first really three acts. And so Dark Angel was my first real band. That was the first band I ever played, you know, gigs with. And I just realized something like two days ago that the very first time I ever played on a stage, period, was with Slayer. Because I used to do Dave's sound checks, you know, for him. So he could go out in the front of house and, you know, just hear, hey, this is what the band sounds like, you know. And, I had never played on stage with a band before that. But I was like, yeah, man, Dave, I'll do your sound checks for you. I'll, you know, play some Slayer tunes or whatever. And you get to hear what the band sounds like. And so I was just like thinking about that the other day for the first time. I was like, yeah, the first band you ever played with, period, first time you ever played on stage was with Slayer. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then, I introduced you as the Atomic Clock, but I'm just curious, how did that nickname come your way?
That really kind of came from the heathen from Zimmer's Hole. One time we were rehearsing Chris Valigo, the heathen for the vocalist of Zimmer's Hole. Check them out. Val's one of the greatest metal vocalists in all of history, man. He'll blow your mind. Zimmer's Hole was incredible. You know, it was Jed Simon, Byron Stroud, Steve Wheeler on drums before me, but Jed and Byron from Strapping, and Val was definitely very present in a lot of Devin Townsend projects. You know, Val's such a great vocalist. He'd come in, do background vocals, and do some odd lead vocals on Strapping records. And it just Val happened to mention one time, he's like, dude, you know, we were doing a Strapping jam at his place. He had the place where he lived was also a Harley shop. You know, it was a Harley shop. So we Strapping jammed in a Harley shop. That was pretty cool. We just happened to like walk by. He's like, Hoagland, you are the Atomic Clock on drums. And it just kind of stuck. You know, I think Devin was there and we heard it. And Devin's like, ah, that's pretty cool. It beats being called, you know, Gene the Drumming Machine, you know, kind of thing. So Atomic Clock, there you go. Brendan Small has been starting to call me the Zen Octopus. You know, he refers to me as that. I'm like, that is pretty apt as well, because I've always gotten into a pretty Zen state playing the severe metal, and especially the more intense metal it gets, the more of a Zen zone I get into. You know, you kind of have to be. You have to get really calm to play the super psychotic intense stuff. So that's why it looks like I'm, you know, a lot of people like, Hoagland, looks like you're falling asleep up there. It's like, oh no, man, I'm, you know, but you're playing all this like crazy stuff. You know, how do you look so like sleepy while you're doing it? It's like, I'm just in the zone, man. I am the Zen Octopus now. So
yeah, that's your meditative state, huh?
Indeed. Absolutely.
And then you mentioned Strapping, you know, what was that time like for you and working with your relationship with Devin?
That was such an amazing time. Strapping came along at such a wonderful time for me because I was looking for something exactly like Strapping. Like, I had been thinking for a number of months before then, like, I would love to be involved in a project that is like nothing you've ever heard before. It doesn't look to the past. It's just trying to create its own thing, because I've I've always been all about like trying to be original, trying to create the next thing as opposed to maybe, you know, looking in the past or whatever. You know, it's always great to try to level. When you level yourself up, everything else surrounding you gets leveled up. You know, if you're leveling your own action up, you're going to level up the genre. And I'm all about leveling up genres. You know, let's create genres. Let's whatever genres we're involved in, let's get those up to a higher level. And that was strapping for me. You know, the genre of heavy metal got such a kick in the ass through bands like Strapping, and working with Devin was great. You know, he was such a young creative mind at the time, and we happened to catch Devin right, you know, right at kind of like the apex of, have you ever heard about when a Marshall cabinet is about to explode and like not work anymore? It sounds the best it ever sounded. And that's kind of the way we were able to catch Deb for me, like with all that Strapping stuff, man. That just, that was a really magical era for me, you know. And so it, we, you know, created a lifelong friendship, lifelong brotherhood with all the guys from Strapping. So that was very cool. And hey, we got to make some great music, and you know, all the Devin Townsend music as well, Infinity and Terria, all the albums that I got to be involved in. Those are all great, amazing records. So I'm really happy and proud to be a part of all of that. Totally.
Spoken like a true Zen octopus. I love it.
Right.
And then, you know, you talked about your first time ever playing on stage, playing with a legendary band like Slayer, but you went on to also be like the longest running drummer for another legendary metal band out there, Testament. What was that time like?
You know, that was always a blast. I mean, you know, the Testament guys were, you know, like I was, when I very first got brought into to Testament, you know, that was on the Demonic record, and that was at a time when, boy, I tell you, heavy metal was in such a state of flux, a state of transition, you know, a state of confusion, you know, definitely, that I loved what they did with Demonic. You know, it sounded so un-Testament-like, and of course it was a kind of a trippy thing for their fans to hear that were used to hearing, you know, the New Order and you know, Electric Crown or you know, all the classic thrash stuff that they had before. And here comes Demonic, you know, with Chuck Billy with a, you know, a new approach to vocals that, I mean, he might have never done death metal before, but he established himself as one of the mightiest death metal throats around with one record. That was killer, and the music was heavy. It was awesome. So the Demonic era had its own little portion of time, and they followed that up with The Gathering, which was a little more palatable for the Testament fan. And then when I came along for, what was that, the Dark Roots of Earth, and then Brotherhood of the Snake and Titans of Creation. I think I did three records with them, right? I think it's three. Those are all killer records. You know, the Testament has a respect in the scene that they just put out good stuff. They put out music that you can dig, you know? So working with Testament, you know, like yesterday, and I sent Eric Peterson some pictures yesterday of our guitarist, Lara Christine, with Buck Dharma from Blue Oyster Cult. Cause in town right now, like Lara and I are here in Los Angeles, we're rehearsing with Bear McCreary. We'll talk about that in a minute, but Buck Dharma came to the rehearsals yesterday, and we're playing a song with Buck Dharma from Blue Oyster Cult. Wow. Eric is a huge Blue Oyster Cult fan, and he's, you know, more cowbell, you know, he's a guy that, you know, wrote, you know, Don't Fear the Reaper, Godzilla, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we're doing a jam with Buck, and you know, Slash was at the, we're doing a gig with Slash this weekend too, and I just snapped a shot and I sent it to Eric. You know, just, he's such a Blue Oyster Cult fan, he's such a Lara Christine fan as well, so you know, that's pretty damn fun. But yeah, we're pals and we're buddies, and I totally wish Testament the best. I know they're recording a new record now, and they're gonna bring the metal totally. You know, their new drummer Chris Dovas, killer drummer, it's gonna be great. So you know, more power to Testament, absolutely.
Nice. And I think the last time that I actually got to see you in person and say hey to you was at Louder Than Life this past last year. With you were out with Death Clock.
Very cool.
Yeah, what was that? What's that been like playing with them?
Death Clock is amazing. You know, I mean, that is just another, you know, that Death Clock is awesome. It's so much fun to play. I've been, you know, Brendan Small and myself, we've been working together for 18 years now. So, you know, I've been the drummer on most Death Clock things. So all the albums and the majority of the shows and things like that. So that's pretty darn fun. And it's awesome. It's awesome working with Brendan. It's awesome playing Death Clock material. I love Death Clock music. I love Brendan Small. It's fantastic working with him, and it's just been a total pleasure. And I get to play in one of the in the damn coolest cartoon death metal band of all time. That's pretty darn fun. And you know, that's when the thing that really attracted me to Death Clock is when Brendan reached out. The show was on the air. And I wasn't real familiar with it because I'd just been running and running. And he was like, he had called me up and said, we have a budget for an album. You know, might you be interested? And I'm like, of course. You know, I was a session drummer at the time. He's like, I love your drumming. I know all your stuff. And might you be able to have some time? And can we work out maybe being able to do a record together? And I knew that the show was on. Was just starting to air. They were on, you know, just a handful of episodes on at the time. So I was able to check out the show like pretty much later that evening on Adult Swim. And I was like, wow, the humor is its own style of humor, which was really hilarious. But the music was what got me. I'm like, this is serious metal. This is not, you know, this man is a metal fan. This man knows what he's doing, you know? So, that's, you know, the music was funny, but it ain't no joke kind of thing, you know? That's something that's always been a thing about Death Clock is that the music is killer, you know? So that was the thing that totally hooked me in, and I'm like, yes, let's definitely do this, you know? So, and it's been a great run. We get to put out great records. You know, we have Death Album 4 out now. Check that thing out. That's a killer record. It's, you know, it's awesome, man. I love all Death Clock albums. And you know, the movie, The Army of the Doomstar, that's also on release. That's on HBO Max now. So check that out if you haven't seen it. You know, do the dive into the Adult Swim area of HBO Max. Check out the movie and, you know, rerun some episodes if you like. But that was one thing that Death Clock always had back in the day was... you know, people came up to us and people still come up to us, you know, we just finished a tour last week, you know, the latest run with Dragon Force and Necrogoblicon. You know, we finished that a week ago. And people come to us and say, you are the first metal band I ever heard. You know, when I was a kid, you know, sneaking downstairs to watch the episodes when I was a kid, you were the first heavy metal band I ever heard. So Death Clock, definitely a gateway to metal for a lot of folks, you know, so that's pretty darn cool, and we'll take it, you know, it's a kick-ass band, and I'm not a super-duper proud achievement for myself. I love it, totally.
Nice. And then speaking, you know, keeping with the death theme, you know, you got to play with Death and play alongside Chuck. What was that, what was your relationship like with Chuck, and what was that time period like?
You know, it was, it seems like it was so much longer than it actually was. You know, it's like about 3 years all told, but it just seems longer, and it just seems to have taken on this kind of historical impact. But Chuck and I were great. You know, we were pals before Death, and we were, you know, we were pen pals back in the old tape trading days, you know, so, you know, we were all really aware of Mantis, and we'd get the Mantis demos and things like that. So that was always cool. And when we started working together, you know, it just became a really cool synergistic sort of thing. You know, I tried to create the best drums that I could going over Chuck's riffs, and also getting to work with the master, Steve DiGiorgio. I mean, Steve and I have been brothers ever since. You know, we were pals before Individual Thought Patterns, but the Individual Thought Patterns era just created a total brotherhood in us. So, you know, we're really excited about that. And, you know, rhythm section, the apocalypse there, I tell you. So that's awesome. Got to work with Steve on many an occasion. So working with Chuck, working with Death, and having the albums like that, that's, you know, Death helped kind of redefine the genre of death metal at the time, you know, and Death helped, you know, it's arguably Death helped create death metal itself. You know, just the brutal, visceral, gore lyrics kind of stuff. And then a few albums later, Death helped define the genre of technical death metal. You know, I mean, there was Atheist, and Watchtower was a huge influence on us all. And, you know, Cynic was really young and demo at the time, but getting a couple of guys from Cynic leveled up the technicality of death big time, and that helped usher in technical death metal totally. And then with Individual Thought Patterns and Symbolic, helped redefine the genre a third time with melodic death metal, helped kind of usher that sort of style in. So kudos to Chuck Schuldiner, kudos to the band Death for helping create and redefine genres. That's, I'm all about that, you know, so I'm really proud, very happy to be able to be a part of that sort of history of heavy metal. That's pretty darn cool. I will take that anytime, totally.
And now keeping the legacy going, you playing with Max and everybody, getting ready to hit the road now with Death to All. Want to talk about how that came together?
Absolutely. I got the old one. I got the old Death to All shirt going on. Yay, bitch. Yay, boo. That's pretty fun. Well, in 2011, there was a re-release and remastering and stuff like that of the Individual Thought Patterns record. And so I was doing a number of clinics. I was just doing a load of clinics at the time. So I thought, well, just to kind of, to celebrate the release of that, I started doing a bunch of clinics that were solely devoted to the Individual Thought Patterns record. And a person had come to one of my clinics, and that kind of put a notion into his mind. So he approached myself and Sean Reinert a couple of months after that and proposed this concept of us going out to, you know, getting the guys from the band together and going out and doing the concept of, you know, doing a tribute to Chuck. And we dug the concept of it. And so it was its inception. And then the creation has just evolved over time, and now we are at this lineup of, you know, of course, Max Phelps on vocals and Chuck guitar, Bobby Coble from Symbolic album. Heck yeah. I mean, he's my personal favorite death guitarist, you know, dream guitarist there. And then Steve DiGiorgio, my brother, you know, best bassist on the planet to me, you know, he's my favorite bassist flat out. So we're just very fortunate. We've got this super duper dream lineup, and, you know, Max, of course, he takes us very seriously, and he honors Chuck's parts. He honors Chuck's voices, you know, like throughout the years, you know, you saw Chuck's voice evolve from album one to album seven. And, you know, Max is there with all of it. So it is such an amazing night of metal. And God, the Death to All shows are so insane and killer, and we have such a great time doing this. And that's why I tell everybody that, you know, you do not want to miss this. You want to catch this show. You do not want to be getting that phone call from your friends the next day going, dude, where were you? My God, because this night, I mean, it's Death, for God's sake. You know, it's the music of Death being played by the guys from Death. The only way that this you know, this music should be played. Like, we played the album one to album seven, you know, like we could, you know, like, just, okay, well, Steve and I, you know, Steve, you played on Human, and you and I played on Individual, and Bobby and I play on Symbolic, so we just do those three albums. No, that doesn't do a service to the Death material or catalog or Chuck. So do it all, you know. And now our next run, which starts in a week-ish, under a week kind of thing, you know, we are doing the Scream of Perseverance tour, which is going to involve like two nights in many, many cities. And the first night is Scream Bloody Gore in its entirety, along with the other albums that surrounded it, you know, Leprosy, Spiritual Healing, you know, kick-ass tunes from both of those records, the Brutal Night. And then the more technical, melodic night or whatever, you got the, we're doing the Sound of Perseverance in its entirety. And then there's all the other records that we did around that era, Human, Individual, Symbolic. And so, you know, you got the best of both worlds. And that's one thing I think the Death fan has evolved to. I freely admit, when we were putting on Individual and Symbolic, a lot of Death fans were kind of scratching their heads like, what happened? You know, where's Scream Bloody Gore? Where's Leprosy? You know, and Chuck, to his credit, he had to write from his heart. You know, he's like, that was me then. This is me now. I have to write the music that I feel in my heart now. So if we lose fans, then fair enough, but hopefully we gain some. And look at those albums. Every album is a classic record in the Death catalog for many different reasons. And I do feel like most Death fans who came along in the later era, they appreciate the earlier stuff. The guys that were only there for the earlier stuff, they've come to appreciate the later stuff. And so that's why I think these shows are going to be really successful. And I would highly suggest to everybody, man, catch these shows, because you're going to see some killer music and you're also going to have a great time, you know, and you're going to see some killer musicianship, and it's all great.
Yeah. I think the closest you're going to be to my neck of the woods here in the Cleveland area is Columbus. You guys are playing the King of Clubs on May 21st as a part of the tour. So definitely encourage everybody to go check it out. I'd definitely be remiss, though, if being, you know, a Cleveland guy, if I didn't bring up, you know, the first time that I ever met you was through my friends Jason Popson and Tommy Schaffner and Steve Rockhorse, when you're playing with Pitch Black Forecast. What was that time like for you?
Love Pitch Black, man. Absolutely. It was amazing, and got what really fun material we got to put together, you know? And so, yeah, I love all my brothers in Pitch Black, you know. I love J-Man. I love Tommy, love Steve, and love Bobby Reinhard, you know, he came along too. And so, you know, we got to put out two releases, and that was killer stuff. You know, the first album was called Absentee, and then the second one's called Burning in Water, Drowning in Flame. A quick little EP that we threw together, and I think they combined both albums at one point, and I sure would like to see those come back online. But yeah, that was a killer band. You know, there's just I have so many kick-ass projects that just like they might not have lasted forever, but they're still killer stuff. So I've always tried to leave that as a part of my legacy, is only put out kick-ass quality metal. And that was definitely some, you know, some kick-ass quality metal, you know, totally.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I've been friends with those guys. I mean, especially Tommy and Steve, since they were kids, you know, watching their evolution here in the Cleveland area. And it was just so cool to see them be able to make that magic with you. And I'd love to see it come back.
Me
possibly
too.
Down the line.
I hope so. Darn tootin'.
And then, you know, I, you know, the first or the only drummer I think I read featured in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, right? Crazy. Yeah. Well,
how did that happen?
Well, that was on the cover of the Wall Street Journal. I remember it's the December 29th, 2013. article issue or whatever. Yeah, it just I'd received a phone call from or an email from a journalist named Neil Shaw, and he said, I'm long story short, I'm doing an article. I work for the Wall Street Journal, and I'd love to do an article, you know, featuring you. And I was like, wow, cool. And you know, I of course thought it was a fun little, you know, get a little paragraph somewhere, but it was on the effing cover. So that was pretty darn cool. Yeah, we have that hanging up on the wall at the pad. That was pretty cool, man. Totally.
And then, you know, before we get ready to wrap up, I wanted to ask you a couple questions that I normally ask guests that I have on real quick. Who are three people who've inspired you and you can credit for making you the person you are today?
Well, I will freely admit that the reason I'm on this planet today is due to Lara Christine. That is my biggest inspiration on stuff, and it is because when my path was going like in a way that, you know, I was not going to be around for a long time, she grabbed me by the neck and said, "Dude, this world needs you on this planet, you know, so we're gonna that old way that you used to live, man, it's changing, and you're gonna be around for a long time due to what I'm about to show you how to do this." Got my nutrition correct, you know, because at the time I weighed 410 pounds, and you know, now I've fluffed up a little bit, but I lost 180 pounds, and a lot that was due to her influence, and also just, you know, she's coolest person I know. So that is why I'm here today. That's the most recent, absolutely. And in terms of my rock and roll experience, like my exposure to music, you know, my parents, big time, and my sister and my cousin Ken were big influences on me when I was like 8 through 13 on, you know, they were the ones that were turning me on to all the music, you know, now pretty much known as, you know, classic rock, but all the Kiss, Aerosmith, Ted Nugent, Black Sabbath, Queen, Angel, you know, all those kind of bands, all the cool Cheap Trick, all that stuff, Van Halen, those two folks were definitely huge influences on my early career, and which led me to a meeting a person when I met them when I was 14 and knew them, you know, until I was about 15 or 16. And this person told me one time, we were driving in the car, and the band that he played with ended up becoming huge. And I remember him telling me once, he's like, "I don't care who I have to step on, walk on, screw over, F over to better myself in the music industry. I don't care who I have to use or abuse or discard afterwards. I don't care. I'm going to make it in the music business." And I was like 15 when he was telling me this. And I was like, you know what? That sounds so wrong to me. Like, that just sounds like you are going to go nowhere. And sure enough, he got booted out of his band. The band became huge. Everybody knows the band. I won't even mention the name, but yeah, they're you know, legendary band. He got the boot. He never did anything after that. And I was like, whatever he just said, do the opposite. Like that yeah, is so like just evil. Like, be good, you know, help people, help your friends. Like, if you got a leg up and you could give your friend's band a leg up, hey man, come join us on a gig, or come, hey, you know, here's a record label, check these guys, you know, here's a demo record label, check these guys, you know, help people. Don't be a, like, I don't care who I have to step on or walk on. That is so wrong to me. So
yeah.
So those are some influences, definitely.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, you just had me thinking about a lot of things too. It's like, you know, I'm in recovery, 15 years sober now, and you know how when I started putting the principles in action and helping others, that's when it really I really started seeing how better my life's become. Now, also speaking on being in recovery, I still struggle with one thing, and that's the nutrition that you mentioned too, man. I had a minor heart attack in 2020, had a stent put in. You know, I started turning things around and exercising regularly and eating right, but you know, I'll still. Man, if there's one thing that can be an addiction, man, it's food. And it's crazy how that slips in, and trying to stay the course with that, you know?
That is a challenge, and that's always been my addiction. You know, drinking, drugs, never, you know, I had some fun drinking, but never really got into drugs. But yeah, food, that's, you know, that's always my challenge. So there you go. I understand totally.
And then before your tap dancing shoes, favorite toy as a child?
Hot Wheels, by far. Hell yeah, man. Hot Wheels, darn tootin'. God, Jesus. Like the 1968 through 72 era of Hot Wheels was just that was a dream time for you know, muscle cars and Hot Wheels in general, man. What a great time. They always had great colors, and they always looked like the cars, you know, the 68 Camaro and, you know, all the stuff that they had was that was my favorite toy when I was a kid, totally. And the Nerf football, totally. That's my action. Wiffle ball, wiffle bat, that's my action too, totally.
Nice. And then any message you have for our military members that are currently serving overseas?
To our military members, we thank you for your service, and we... You know, I tell you one thing, Brendan Small and I have always enjoyed the stories that we've gotten from the military guys and you know, they telling us about how they're cranking death clock as they're going out on maneuvers and things like that. And we get a lot of they bring back, you know, tokens for us, like these coins. And they like, I had this commission for you guys. So we thank you for your service and thank you for all that you have done for our country. And we appreciate you. As always, absolutely.
Awesome. Gene, man, it's been great catching up with you, man. I know we went a little bit over, but I appreciate you giving me some more time, man.
I can still
keep talking with you with, you know, more questions I have. But
if you ever need a follow-up, just reach out to my folks or whoever it is who set this one up, and just we could set up another one at some point. Absolutely, Bill.
And then for any of the fans out there that are watching this and want to follow what current project you're working on now, or, you know, even check the tour dates for Death to All and stuff, where would you send them?
Well, I would send them to any of my socials, definitely all the official Gene Hoaglands and all that kind of stuff, all the Twitter and Instagram and Facebooks and all that sort of stuff. Reversed Records is another one. Those guys are always on top of what I'm doing, and definitely check the tour dates on the Death to All run. Come out and check it out. We got the Mighty Cryptopsy opening for us. They're doing something similar that we are. They're doing an album a night and an album a night. So it's going to be a killer night of two nights of metal for most places. So you don't want to miss it. You definitely want to come out and catch that one. So check that out. And right now, this past week was the release of Bear McCreary's The Singularity, which that's Bear's solo album. And all I could do is tell people, check that out. My word. That's one of the best albums I've ever been involved on. It involves so many folks on it. It's a great sounding record. The material is killer. And just... check out Bear McCreary, The Singularity, and I will let the music speak for itself. And, you know, if you're a fan of, like, for me, if you're a fan of, like, Strapping or Devin Townsend or Death Clock, you know, Bear McCreary's done a lot of work with Death Clock. So check out what he's done. Look up Bear McCreary, The Singularity. We're doing the show. The album release show is tomorrow here in Los Angeles on May 12th here in L.A. at the Fonda Theater. Don't know when this is getting aired, but, you know, if you're in the L.A. area, you want to catch this show because it's going to blow your mind, man. It is killer. And the album is amazing, definitely.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what I was going to follow up on. You did mention what, you know, that you're out there for something. I wanted to make sure that we covered that. So that's what you got going on right now then.
Absolutely. And Laura Christine's here with you. If you hear this noodle, I don't know if you can hear the guitar noodling in the background. That's Laura Jam, because she's in the band as well. And, you know, she kicks off the record. You know, her riffs kick off the first two songs, and that's killer. And it's got everybody on it. Serge Tankian, Corey Taylor, Jens from Meshuggah, Kim Thiel, Scott Ian, Rufus Wainwright, Brendan Small, Brian Beller, Laura Christine, it's got Buck Dharma, you know, you name it. It's just, the list just goes on and on and on, and everybody stepped up gigantically to do a great job on the record. So check it out, man. I'll let the music do the talking, definitely.
Awesome, awesome. Corey's out there right now too, you said?
Nope, but we've got a couple of the guests on it are going to be at the show. Yeah, we got Buck Dharma, and we have the Mighty Slash is playing with us. We're doing some rehearsing yesterday. Slash is all over the record, and he crushes it. He kills it. So that's going to happen at the show, totally.
Awesome. Well, yeah, then I'll go ahead and get the editing done and get this up there, man, so people can check it out, man.
Thank you.
Gene, thank you again so much for your time. Can I ask one last favor before I let you go?
You got it.
You mind cutting a promo ID for the show? Just introduce yourself, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle.
Hello, everybody. This is your big buddy, Gene Hoagland, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle.
Awesome. Gene, man, thank you so much for your time. It was great catching up with you, and I look forward to running into you again on the road, man.
I hope so. We'll see you soon.
All right. Take care.
Take care. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
In the ever-evolving world of music, artists need to reach their audience faster than ever before. Introducing Too Immersive For You, the Emmy-nominated pioneers in viewership experience. We've revolutionized the way music artists share their material with the world. Our groundbreaking AI engine generates stunning visuals that bring your music to life. Imagine having your own personalized music video, perfectly synchronized to your unique sound in a matter of hours, not weeks. With Too Immersive For You, it's now a reality. Get ready to unlock a new dimension of music visualization. Too Immersive For You, where music meets immersive visuals. Contact us now to discover how Too Immersive For You can elevate your music to new heights. www.musicvideoai.net.